Welcome to the Fight Science Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Sullivan. In this series, we're continuing our journey of broadening our knowledge in the field of combat sports science by speaking to experts in the fields of nutrition science, psychology, strength and conditioning, and much more to help you become the best practitioner you can be. Today, our guest is Mr. Creatine himself, Dr. Scott Forbes. Dr. Scott is an assistant professor at the University of Brandon in Manitoba, Canada, and this is his second time on the podcast. He is widely regarded as one of the world's leading researchers and experts when it comes to everyone's favorite supplement, creatine. In this episode, Dr. Scott and I are going to answer all of your questions about creatine. We discuss dosages, timing, cycling, who it's useful for, what the latest research is suggesting, creatine for brain health, and much more. This is a great episode with so much good info, so let's get to it. All right, our Zoom friend has told us that recording is in progress, so we are live for another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. So joining me for a second time, we've got my good friend, Dr. Scott Forbes, all the way from Manitoba, Canada. Dr. Scott, thanks so much for coming back on, mate.
Yeah, happy to be here and happy to talk about creatine any chance I get.
I was going to say, I always get lots and lots of questions about creatine. Every week in my Q&A, I get flooded with questions about creatine. Rightly so, because it's such an important supplement, such a great nutrient. But then I just think, man, I got to get Dr. Scott back on. We've got to go over this. So today, what I want to do with you, Dr. Scott, I put it up to the listeners. I said, what are your top questions we have for creatine? I've got about 9-10 questions that we're going to go through. But first, before we get into this, how you been? What's been happening? What's been going on? We're just talking about, we're coming into winter in Canada. What's that like over there?
Yeah, so it's the first snowstorm today in Manitoba. So the snow is going to be rolling in pretty soon, and it's getting pretty cold. So I'm not looking forward to the next 5 or 6 months, but yeah, they should fly by, and then summer will be here again.
That's something that I think I took advantage for so long when living in Oz, and I did not appreciate until I did live in Canada, is the seasonal aspect of the year. Like, I think in Oz we have summer, which is really, really hot for like 3 months, and then it gets slightly less hot for the rest of the year, but it's nice. And I think the best time for anyone to visit Oz is in winter, because it's like 20 to 25 degrees and like it's quite cool. But then when I moved to Canada, I was like, it's literally you're in winter in certain areas of Canada for 9 months of the year, which is brutal.
Yeah, it's a bit of a struggle, but hey, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, that's it. Hey, Dr. Scott, let's get right into this. There's about 9 questions here. Very, very cool questions. Things that I get asked all the time, and I'm sure you get asked these all the time as well, but let's go through these. I think the listeners will get a lot of value out of these. I think let's just start, quick overview. I'm sure you've answered this 100,000,001 times, but just for people who are listening, they just want to get up to speed, creatine. Can you give us just the 30-second elevator pitch? What is it? Where's it from? And why should we be taking it?
Yeah, so creatine is derived from 3 amino acids, arginine, glycine, and methionine. And once it's taken in, there's a few ways to get it. So you could actually, your body can synthesize its own creatine in the liver and kidneys, and also in your brain as well. And you can get it from dietary sources, typically red meat, seafood, also poultry as well, or chicken. So those are kind of the main sources, I guess, of dietary creatine. But, or you can supplement with it. So you can go and get that mysterious white powder and mix that with some water, and you can supplement with creatine as well. So those are the 3 ways to create creatine. Once you take it and get it into the bloodstream, about 95% of it is taken into the muscle. And then it can be converted into phosphocreatine, and that's essentially stored potential energy. So anytime you're doing really high intensity type activity or need energy very quickly, then you can break down phosphocreatine to create this molecule known as adenosine triphosphate, which is essentially the energy currency within the muscle.
Excellent, excellent. All right, so good little review here. Let's go through these questions. I'm going to throw in an additional one that I just remembered I got asked, but whenever we talk about creatine, people always say, oh, it's the most researched supplement out there. Oh, it's got the most evidence, most data. How much truth is there behind that statement that creatine is well and truly the most researched? What do we mean when people say that?
Yeah, so there is a lot of studies on creatine. There's probably over 500 studies that have looked at dietary supplementing with creatine in humans. So it's definitely one of the most studied supplements out there. And I think the reason why is because it can impact a variety of different tissues within the body. I mentioned previously that about 95% of it is stored within the muscle, but creatine can also impact your brain, your bone tissue, your bones, other tissues as well, such as adipose tissue. So there's been a lot of research looking at creatine supplementation. So we know a lot about it.
If you were digging through the research, I guess it's a positive having so much of it, but then maybe a negative of having so much is you have to filter through and kind of go, okay, what is good research? What isn't? Like, is this information applicable? Is it not? How do they get this information? What's a good way to distinguish good information about creatine from maybe not so good info?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there's a variety of different ways to kind of decipher good information from bad information. There's different levels of journals. So you can look at what's known as the impact factor of those journals. You might also look at the sample size that was used to conduct the research as well. Those are a couple of the main things. I would recommend, if you're just kind of starting out into this, to look for some position stand papers. And there's one through the International Society of Sport Nutrition, where they brought a whole bunch of experts together and talked about creatine and exercise. And they reviewed everything associated with that in 2017, and they're currently updating it right now. So hopefully a kind of updated version will be released relatively soon. And then there's another supplement paper for high intent or for high level athletes that the International Olympic Committee posted as well. So those are probably the two best kind of sources for supplements. And they both discuss obviously creatine.
All right. So the ISSN and the IOC, if you're listening and you want to learn a bit more, go look at those papers. Dr. Scott, let's jump into this Q&A. So first question that I got asked, and this is a really good one, actually, and I feel like this gets jumped over a lot, but what distinguishes a good creatine from a not so great one? Is that even a thing? Are they all the same? Or is there quite literally this one's good and this one's not so good?
Yeah, so creatine monohydrate is probably the most studied form of creatine, but there's a whole bunch of other forms of creatine. And those other forms will try to sell you on maybe an enhanced absorption or uptake. But there is a recent systematic review and meta-analysis that tried to investigate what was the best type of creatine to take. And at the end of the day, they concluded that creatine monohydrate was. There was no other form of creatine that was superior to creatine monohydrate. And creatine monohydrate is the most studied. We know it's safe, and it's also the cheapest form of creatine. So right now, based off the scientific literature, that's what we have to conclude is that, you know, you should take creatine monohydrate, and there's no other form that's better than that.
What is it about monohydrate that say is better than these other forms?
So it's very well absorbed. It's also when your liver and your kidneys synthesize creatine, it's essentially creatine monohydrate. So that's what's transported to the muscle. It's very easy to do. It's well transported into the muscle. That's essentially what makes it one of the best types or forms of creatine.
A question I get asked a lot when guys are even looking between creatine monohydrate brands, they often ask us, hey, the purity of the creatine. And they often send me like these tiny differences of 0.02% differences between this brand and this brand. And for me, I kind of look at it. Maybe I'm not in the know, but I look at those numbers and go, hey, man, just get it. Just take it in you. What's your thoughts on it? Is there a big difference between these percentage differences of purity of the creatine monohydrate?
There's no scientific support to suggest that that small difference is going to have a large effect. So typically for athletes, I would suggest to get one that's independently tested. So there's different organizations like NSF or Trusted in Sport or Informed Sport to basically say that the product is what it is. But besides that, it probably doesn't matter. So buy whatever's the cheapest creatine monohydrate powder you can get, and it's probably fine.
Just take it, as long as you take it, hey?
Yeah.
So next question that's coming in, I'm sure you've got this, like I said, a million and one times, but again, it's good info to have. What are the best dosages of creatine monohydrate, the timing to take it? And I guess the last one, there's probably a separate question on its own, is the loading phase, the infamous loading phase. Is that even necessary nowadays?
Yeah, so those are all great questions. So I'm going to start with the loading phase one. So we know there was in the 1990s, there was actually a study looking at if you took 3 grams of creatine for 28 days, you got about a 20% increase in the amount of creatine within your muscles. And they also, in that same study, they showed if you took 20 grams of creatine per day for 5 days, you got about a 20% increase in creatine within your muscles. So you don't have to load, but it might take a little bit longer to saturate your muscles. So it depends on the goal that the athletes want to achieve. If they want to load their muscles super quickly, then go ahead, do the loading phase. The downside of that is there's some side effects that some people experience during the loading phase. So you can avoid those side effects just by consuming a lower dose for a little bit longer period of time. And you get the same increase in creatine within your muscle. So what's the different dosages that are out there? So typically we use 5 grams per day, and that's a very easy number to remember. And we know that it's very effective to enhance muscle performance. A lot of the research that we do, we actually use a relative dosing, 0.1 grams per kilogram of body weight per day. And what we actually know is that both those doses can be effective for muscle performance. But as I mentioned, that creatine can impact other areas within your body. And just based off some of the literature that we've looked at recently, it looks like a higher dose of creatine might be required to enhance bone health. So if that's a goal to get stronger bones, you might need a little bit more than 5 grams. And then also in older adults that were performing resistance training, we found better improvements in lower body strength when they consumed that relative dosing or slightly higher than 5 grams a day. To enhance, lower body muscular strength. So the exact dose is not totally well known, and we might need a little bit more than what we traditionally recommend.
And you mentioned there the side effects, Scott, and I'm sure we all know what we're going to start talking about here, but what are the most common side effects when you're taking it, especially if you're doing that loading phase?
Yeah, so a little bit of like GI distress, or like you might feel bloated or things like that. So you can avoid those just by consuming a slightly lower dose. But as I mentioned, it's the exact dose depends on what your goals are. So if you just want to saturate your muscle with creatine, you can take 3 grams a day for 28 days. But there are some emerging research studies to show that to get like the bone effects, you might have to consume a little bit more, but you wouldn't have to go to what we traditionally do for that loading phase, which is 20 grams a day. For the brain effects, we actually don't know what the best dose is. So it might be a higher dose, it might be a lower dose, but right now we don't know a dose and effect for the brain. And then previously you actually asked about timing of creatine. And so this is kind of been a topic that we've done some research studies on, and my opinion's changed a little bit in the last couple of years. There was some evidence that taking creatine right after training was better than taking it before training, but we've just finished a study and we just got it published. And what we found was actually no difference between taking creatine before training and after training. And the study that we used was known as a within subject design study. And it's essentially a very powerful model. So the previous studies used a between subject design. So this is where, for example, Jordan, you'd get randomized to take creatine after training, and I would get randomized to take creatine before training. We would train for 8 or 10 weeks or whatever length the study was, and we would look at our gains in muscle strength or muscle size. But you might respond differently just because you have different genetics, different dietary intake, all those things. And so it's hard to truly tease out the effects of timing. And so we performed a within subject design where you kind of act as your own control. So this is where I made you train your right side of your body one day and the left side of your body the next day. And one side of your body got creatine before training and the other side got creatine after training. And this controls for genetics, dietary intake, sleep, all those things that could potentially impact your training adaptations. And when we did that, we found no effect of creatine timing. So we're pretty convinced now that it doesn't matter if you take it before or after training.
So just take it any time of the day, whenever's convenient, as long as you take it, that's what's important.
Yeah, whenever is best for you is actually probably the best time to take it. We've also done a study where we've taken it during training, like a sip of creatine after each set. And again, it was an effective strategy. So before training, during training, after training, doesn't matter, just take creatine.
Yeah, awesome. And going back to the side effects, one of the big ones, especially in the sport that I'm in, weight category sports, especially within combat sports, you hear this a lot. It's the water retention. I don't want to take it because I'll get the water retention. I got to make weight. It's going to shoot the scales up. If I see that scale even go up a little bit here, I'm going to have a complete meltdown. What are your thoughts about the water effect when you're taking it? Is it more that it's going to happen within that loading phase? Is it an individual thing? What are your thoughts about it?
Yeah, so we tend to see that increase in water retention more so in the loading phase. So when you are taking that 20 grams per day for 5 days, there's actually some studies that show no increase in total body water or extracellular water or intracellular water over a longer period of time. So initially, when you take creatine into the muscle, it will bring some water into that muscle, but that actually stimulates the muscle to grow. So it's actually a good thing, and it's an anabolic stimulus. So that's, I think, important for your viewers to know that the water retention is actually a good thing. And it tends to happen over the short term, and particularly when you're taking a high creatine loading phase. So if you want to avoid that, just take a lower dose, and you can still get some of the benefits of creatine without maybe absorbing so much water.
If you take a lower dose, Scott, is there a chance you're going to get that slight water retention as well?
It will probably bring in a little bit of water, but it will bring in less compared to that that loading phase, taking 20 grams a day. On average, people gain about 1.2 kilograms of body mass. But part of that is an increase in muscle mass. And we actually know that it can also help you lose a little bit of fat mass when you combine creatine with exercise. So there is some body composition changes that are occurring. But yeah, if you do take that lower dose, you can not completely avoid, but you can definitely lessen the effects of water retention.
This next question is really good, just as a segue from that. How long do the muscles stay saturated? So say you do it, even if you say you don't do the loading phase, you just habitually take, say you're taking 0.1 grams per kilogram per day. How long do the muscles stay saturated? Do you have to just continuously take it, or can you drop off and go back on, or how does that work?
Yeah, so your muscles, once they're saturated, it takes about 4 to 6 weeks to return back to baseline. And so, a lot of people talk about cycling on and off creatine. There's actually been no research to compare cycling on and off creatine versus taking creatine continuously. But in theory, if you take it for 4 weeks, you saturate your muscles, and you go off it for 4 weeks, it will slowly return to baseline over that 4 week period. And then you can take creatine again. So that's a common strategy. But again, there's no science to actually show that cycling on and off creatine is advantageous to taking it continuously, or continuous is better than cycling. No one's actually compared that right now. So Yeah, you can do whatever you want. If you cycle on and off, you can save a little bit of money.
Is that the same, say, if you wanted to periodize it with, say, heavier training periods, if you had a real big, I don't know, hypertrophy block for 4 weeks and coach was making you really go hard? Is there some benefit for, say, increasing your dosage during a period like that?
Yeah, that's a good question. Possibly if the training phase is going to be really hard, creatine can help with recovery. It can also help bring in more glycogen into your muscles as well, which could, it's a fuel source. So it could be a benefit for high intensity exercise. So definitely if somebody was doing a really hard training phase, they should definitely be considering taking creatine. And then if you're doing an easier training phase, yeah, maybe you don't need to supplement with it. You can save your money during that period and then cycle on and off of it. But again, no one's actually done those cycling studies or periodized creatine per se.
I mentioned it before, dietary creatine, and a lot of the sources were meat-based sources. And nowadays, plant-based athletes are very, very popular. I feel like I get a lot of stick from it. And I think people think I give them a lot of crap. I actually eat mostly plant-based and I just have a couple like bits of meat on the weekend. So if people keep getting offended by me giving them slack, give me a break. I feel you. But what are the consequences of having low dietary creatine?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And again, yeah, there's lots of benefits to eating more fruits and vegetables in a plant-based diet. But one of the downsides is possibly you get less dietary creatine. And there's a researcher that's looked at dietary creatine quite a bit. His name is Sergey Ostojic, and he's looked at a variety of different populations from either the general population, pregnant women, older adults, children, and he's tried to look at how much dietary creatine they get in their diet. And the reason why he's so interested in that is because this push for a plant-based diet, but also the impacts of having low creatine in your diet. So we know that creatine can help you build more muscle, so it can improve muscle health and function. Creatine can also impact your cognition, your brain function. And then there's a variety of other kind of mechanisms where creatine can work in a variety of other tissues. And he thinks it's a benefit for pregnant women, a benefit for children, and a variety of other situations as well. So there has been some studies to show a link between, for example, dietary creatine intake and depression. So, which is pretty interesting. So it's correlation, it's an association study, but they showed that those that had more creatine in their diet had a lower risk of depression. So there is some data to support that, and that perhaps dietary intake of creatine is important.
And I think that's the perfect segue into this next question, which will be very, very interesting for general population, athletes, older adults, everyone, I think, would be very interested in this. What are the cognitive benefits of taking creatine?
Yeah, so this is one of the emerging areas of research. And there's been about 10 studies that have looked at the effects of creatine on memory. And we actually have a systematic review and meta-analysis under review right now, looking at the impacts of creatine on your brain, and in particular, memory. And what we know is that when we combine all those studies together, there is a positive impact of creatine on memory. So this could be huge, particularly in older adults, but in a variety of different populations. We all want to be better cognitively, and we want to improve our memory, and creatine can definitely play a role in that.
I guess it's an interesting topic as well, because I guess nootropics and these brain enhancers, quote unquote, are becoming so, so popular in the mainstream now. Is creatine something that you could see moving into that space in the future?
Yeah, definitely. It's probably one of the few nootropics that's been shown to truly have an impact and be of benefit. Again, the studies are a little bit limited. Just for example, on memory, there's only been 10 studies ever published. But we know that it can be an effective supplement. So a lot of the other nootropics out there, there might be one study to support it, but overall they don't work. Creatine is one of the few that when you put all those studies together, it actually shows a positive effect. And we've actually done a study in collaboration with some Brazilians. His name is Marco Machado, and he collected data on Muay Thai fighters, and they found that creatine enhanced the reaction time, which could be obviously really important for combat athletes if you can react a little bit faster. And creatine seems to be an effective supplement to enhance that particular cognitive processing.
Yeah, so you can boost your brain power and get jacked at the same time. Not a bad combination.
Yeah, exactly.
I know it's obviously very early days, but I think a lot of people and a lot of conversations I have, especially when we're talking contact sports and, you know, combat sports, rugby, football, things like this, where there's a lot of impact, talking more about creatine and a potential role for concussion and TBI. Is there any links there?
Yeah, so there's a couple animal studies where they basically showed some benefits of creatine on reducing traumatic brain injury. And the way that they damaged the brain was with hypoxia, so low amount of oxygen. And they showed that if the rats took creatine beforehand, that it protected the brain and they had less damage to their brain. And so there seems to be some powerful effects with regards to creatine for traumatic brain injury or concussions. There's been a couple studies in humans and they showed improved recovery following a concussion. And I believe there's only two studies ever published looking at the impacts of creatine on concussion recovery. And so again, it's pretty limited right now to say that creatine can definitely, you know, protect the brain and improve concussion symptoms. But I know even in Manitoba here, one of my, a guy I did my master's, or he was doing his master's while I was doing my PhD at the University of Alberta. He's now doing his PhD and he's studying the effects of creatine on cognition. So hopefully he gets to work and collects a whole bunch of data and we can truly know if creatine can impact concussion recovery.
Do you think, now obviously this is going to be a lot of hearsay, but do you think in your opinion, are those dosages, are you going to have to be taking quite a bit more of creatine, or is there, do you think is there going to be a loading phase for brain stimulation and then you can drop back down, or how do you predict that's going to be once all this evidence starts coming out?
Yeah, so we can actually get creatine across the blood-brain barrier. So there's creatine transporters at the blood-brain barrier. There's less of those creatine transporters there compared to at the muscle. So it's relatively easy to get creatine into the muscle. It's hard to get it into the brain. So it might require a higher dose to benefit the brain. And your brain can also synthesize its own creatine as well. So we really don't know the impact of different doses on getting more creatine into the brain. In that Muay Thai study, we actually found a low dose, just 3 grams a day for 28 days, which we know can saturate the muscles, was also effective at enhancing reaction time. But it seems to be way less consistent across the literature when you look at the impact of creatine supplementation on creatine brain content. We really don't know. In that systematic review that we have looking at the effects of creatine on memory, we tried to see if there was a dosing effect, so high dose studies versus low dose studies, and it actually didn't show any difference. So I think that's going to be kind of an interesting topic moving forward. But right now we don't know what the best dose is to get creatine into your brain.
Speaking of the Muay Thai, and I want to stick to combat sports and you know what, weight category as a whole, powerlifters, rowers, whatever, because I get this question all the time. It's like, okay, I love taking creatine, but I got to make weight in 8 weeks. what do you recommend I do? Do I titrate it down? Do I just keep it high until the fight week or the competition week and then drop it back down? What would you recommend if a weight category athlete came to you and said, Dr. Forbes, like, I love it, but I'm scared about that scale. What do I do? How do I approach this?
First, I'd tell you to go talk to Jordan because he's a very knowledgeable guy and a great dietitian. And then I've actually written a paper with Tony Ricci, who's another phenomenal, I'd say, researcher, exercise scientist, but also a practitioner as well. And so we've discussed kind of the nuances of creatine supplementation, trying to make weight. And probably the best thing to do, because individuals respond differently, is to just monitor the athlete over time. So if you load the athlete, so this is traditionally what people do, you load for 5 days with creatine to saturate the muscle. You would take their weight before and after that loading phase. And then you put them on a maintenance dose, let's say 5 grams a day. And you can measure them again a week later to see how their body mass is changing. So this would give you an idea of how much water they're retaining. And then you can as it gets closer to the fight, you can decide if you want to remove that water weight or get rid of it. So you can titrate maybe your creatine as it gets closer to the fight, or you can just maintain their creatine dosing if you don't have to lose a lot of weight. So it really depends on how much weight they need to cut and how their bodies responded to the creatine supplementation in the first place.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'm going to say this just because I think the listeners should hear this. If you are a weight category athlete, combat athlete, I feel like if you are worrying so much about the potential extra water that you probably won't even be holding, you're probably cutting too much weight as it is. You're probably trying to push that body. Like, yeah, in some circumstances, yeah, you can do that and you need to do that. For 95% of athletes, if you're worried about these minute changes that might, I'm going to say might, which probably I don't really think that they happen, that this retention of water, you're probably cutting way too much weight. Just take the creatine. The benefits way, way, way outweigh the risk. Just take it. Stop stressing about it. But away from fighters, Dr. Forbes, who do you recommend creatine for? Is this just something that, say, athletes, yeah, like all athletes, you should be taking? But say if I went to my parents or I went to my grandparents, who should I be telling to take this?
Yeah, that's a great question. There could be benefits to almost every human on the planet from creatine supplementation. So there's definitely a lot of research to support that older adults that resistance train or do exercise, they can benefit from taking creatine. So Dr. Darren Kandow has done a lot of research in that area, and I've collaborated quite a bit with him to show that you can get bigger and stronger muscles in individuals over the age of 50 or 55. And so there's a benefit for older adults. And it can also improve functional capacity as well, things like sit to stand, which is important as you age. And there's benefits in children to taking creatine. There's benefits in lots of different populations. Pregnant women, for example, there's research to show possible benefits of creatine supplementation in those populations.
This just came to me, and I think I was just flicking through my social media, and I think it was on the ISSN special interest group. I don't know if you saw this, but it was someone talking about and saying, creatine has so much research behind it now. When is it going to move from, say, like a dietary supplement to a food source and something that is, it needs to be more mainstream and more available for people? Because like you said, there's just seems to be so much benefit for so many people with little to no side effects of it. When does it get to the point where we say, hey, you know what? Like, this needs to be more openly available. You should be able to go to Whole Foods or go to whatever supermarket and then have the option of buying this or even fortifying it with different foods. Do you think that's something that's going to happen in the future?
I think there's a lot of fear associated with creatine and supplements in general. So I think it's going to be a long time before that happens, but there's definitely some researchers out there and some research to suggest that, again, it could be a benefit for a variety of different populations. I mentioned that it could be a benefit for like children or adolescents. And again, there is evidence to support that, but there's definitely less research in that area compared to adults or older adults. So I think some of those safety studies still need to be done to really prove that it is super safe, even though right now there's maybe about 20 studies done in adolescents and they all show that it is safe. But again, I think just more research is required before we can kind of throw it on everybody's plate. But hopefully in the future, everyone on their kitchen table is going to have salt, pepper, and creatine shakers, because I think those things are all pretty important.
I was going to say the big wigs at Whole Foods are probably just waiting for the day that it gets signed off. They've probably got all the background logistics and everything made. So they've probably got hundreds of millions of creatine shakers ready to go for when the day comes.
Yeah.
Very last question, Dr. Forbes, and I want to finish on this one for our Q&A is, what's your own personal opinion when it comes to creatine?
So that's a good question. And people ask me that all the time, like, do you supplement with creatine? And I do supplement with it. I typically cycle with it. So I take it on for about 4 weeks. And I usually take it when I'm really trying to enhance my muscle mass and muscle strength. And then I'll go off creatine for a little bit, usually just to save money because I'm pretty cheap. So there's definitely lots of benefits to creatine. I think there's a lot of questions that we still need to answer. How much do we have to take to get, for example, the brain benefits or the benefits on your bones? What's the interaction of creatine with other supplements? So we've done some preliminary work with creatine and caffeine, and we've shown that it might interact with each other in a negative way. So the interaction of different supplements becomes kind of an important question to answer, because people don't just take creatine. They'll take creatine in those pre-workouts that combine 20 other ingredients as well. So there's still a lot to know. But yeah, creatine is one of the safest supplements that you could possibly take. There's benefits to enhance muscle performance, muscle health, can enhance bone health, bone strength, and it can also make you smarter as well. So there's lots of benefits to creatine. And I would suggest that most people consider taking it.
Boom. And if you don't consider it now, just wait and watch out for the creatine shakers that'll be available at every Whole Foods probably in 5 to 10 years time. Anyway, Dr. Forbes, always a pleasure chatting to you. That was such a good episode. So many questions that I get asked all the time. So I thought, why not? We're well overdue to catch up again. And they're probably the 10 most common questions that I get asked about. So I'm very, very glad that you came on and answered all of them. Dr. Forbes, if people are listening to this and they go, you know what? I need to learn more. I want to get in contact with Scott. I want to hear more about this stuff. What's the best way for them to do that?
Probably on Instagram, which is Scott_Forbes_PhD. And just send me a message there. I check it quite regularly. So that's probably the best way to get a hold of me. And then I also post a bunch of creatine studies and content there as well.
Are we going to see Dr. Scott Forbes on TikTok anytime soon?
No, probably not. I don't have enough time for that. I got two little kids that keep me pretty busy, but you never know. You never know.
Never say never. Anyway, Dr. Forbes, thank you so much for coming on. We'll do it again soon, mate.
Sounds great.
And there it is, another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. There you have it, your top questions about creatine answered. If you want a more in-depth review of where the current research is at, go check out those papers Dr. Forbes mentioned, the ISSN position statement and the IOC consensus piece. This podcast will be available through the podcast app, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and you'll also be able to download it from my website, www.thefightdietitian.com/podcast. If you enjoy listening to the podcast, then be sure to head to the podcast app to give us a rating and leave us a review. Thanks for listening in, and I'll see you guys for the next episode of the Fight Science Podcast.